Right. So I'm here. I'm preaching today. Past few weeks, Gail's been out, and we've had a number of guys that have filled in, and they've done a spectacular job, and so I feel like the pressure's on. And you might be thinking, well, Gail's back. Why doesn't he preach? You might be thinking, well, can't we find somebody else better than me? And you can. There's lots of people here that can be better, that are better than I am. And so I just thinking about that, I felt like, hey, this is the perfect moment to talk about contentment. Gracefully, for you to think about being content at this moment while I'm here and talking. But that's actually not the reason why. I'd already thought about it for a while, and I think contentment's it's an easy thing to understand. It's a hard thing to put into action. I feel like I've had a hard time being content with any number of things, and certainly I think I big picture I look at my life and I think things are good for a lot of different reasons. Number one, being a Christian, being a child of God, that's the number one blessing that we can look for here on earth. But unfortunately, there's an unlimited number of things that I can find to complain about. I think Juliana can attest to that. If you'd like to hear from her after the lesson, you'll probably find out all of the things that I perhaps didn't even realize that I had complained about. But it's easy to start complaining. It's easy to get into a habit of looking typically outside of ourselves and seeing something wrong. We look at things that, perhaps others have that we don't, and we think, oh, I'd like to have that, and so I'm not content. Or we think, well, if I had this one thing, right? I mean, it's like, I don't think anybody watches infomercials, but people over the age of 35 have probably all seen an infomercial from time to time, and the hook is if you get this thing, it will change your life. And I think we probably all fallen victim to, hey, that makes sense. I'll buy this thing. It will change my life. And it doesn't ever really change your life. But we can look at contentment, or discontentment from, wealth. If I had more money, then I could do X, or and maybe some of it is, honorable, that, hey, I wish I could help this person, and if I had more money, I could help that person. Maybe that's the case, but maybe it's also a little bit of greed in there, or possessions. The product that would change your life. I mean, I think everybody here has probably bought a car, and that first day you have it, it's like, wow, this is great. But that car gets old. That new car smell is gone. The miles get up there, something breaks, right? That's just the way it is. And it could be our age, right? And I think, I certainly remember, like when I was 9, I was going to be 10. That's, double digits, big deal. Scarlett's going to be 10 come pretty soon. And the reality is that she's still going to be a kid, but it's like, well, 16 and right. I think, I feel like, Andrew, you just talked about this, right? Somebody did. JJ, yeah, you're right. Thank you. You're always looking forward to that next thing for a while, and then you start thinking, well, I wish I was back there again. Scarlett, I'll trade you, honey. I'll go back to being 10. We might look at, physical attributes, you might want to be taller or have different features that you don't have. But what you have is what God's given you. It might be your health, and certainly, health issues. I would say they're maybe some things where we're not content with that maybe seem a little bit more reasonable. Health is kind of one of those. Being sick every day is not fun. Who wants that? And to sit on your bed when you're too weak and sick to get out of it, and to think, I wish that your health were better, not praying that your health were better. There's certainly room for that. There's nothing wrong with that. But having a contempt that your health is not better, being angry that your health is not better is not a healthy thing to do. And yet we can sit there and be upset for any number of reasons and complain for any number of reasons. It might be your job. Well, if I had a different job, then I would be happy. Well, if I had a different boss, then things would be good. If I moved here, then things would be good. And if my spouse were a little bit different, then things would be good, right? We can go on and on and on about how things are unjust, that things the way the world is, way that we might be treated. We can find reason to complain. We can find reason to have disappointment. And we can dwell on that, and it's a distraction. And it's discontent. It's malcontent. It's not content. It might be contempt, but it's not content. And so this morning I'd like to talk about three things. Number one, I want to just point out some examples, and there are many of them, but examples of contentment and discontentment within the Bible. Two, some barriers to contentment, just some verses that talk about contentment in a number of different ways that I want to point out. And then the last part, the secret to contentment. So if you turn with me back to Genesis 33, you remember Jacob had cheated his brother into the birthright. Out of fear, he left his home and went and returned back to where his mother was from, he is now, 20 some years older, and he's got a family, and he's returning back to his home, and he's worried, what is Esau going to do with him? What is Esau going to do to him? And he's thought about this. I'm sure Jacob had some guilt over perhaps what he did. It seems reasonable to think that. It seems reasonable to think that he knew that he was in the wrong, based on how this plays out. So, verse 33 of Genesis 33, and Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming, and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two female servants, and he put the servants with their children in front, then Leah with her children, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. He himself went on before them, bowing himself to the ground seven times until he came near to his brother. He goes to his brother. He wants to, acknowledge his humility to him. In verse 4, what's Esau going to do? I'm sorry. That was actually in verse 1. I said verse 33. I'm sorry. That was chapter 33, verse 1. Now we're in verse 4. But Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. It couldn't have been a better response from Esau. Esau could have done any number of things. He had 400 men with him. He could have obliterated them. But instead, he welcomes him. And in verse 8, Esau said, let me back up here. I'm sorry. In verse 6, then the servants drew near and their children and bowed down. Leah likewise and her children drew near and bowed down. And at last, Joseph and Rachel drew near and they bowed down. And Esau said, what do you mean by all this company that I met? Jacob answered, to find favor in the sight of my Lord. But Esau said, I have enough, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself. Jacob said, no, please. If I have found favor in your sight, then accept my present from my hand. For I have seen your face, which is like seeing the face of God, and you have accepted me. And so here Jacob offers a gift, and Esau says, no, I've got enough. He could take more, right? I mean, we could all take more from time to time, but he said, I've got enough. And then the response from Jacob, starting in verse 11, please accept my blessing that is brought to you because God has dealt graciously with me and because I have enough. Thus he urged him and he took it. And so here you have two brothers that both acknowledge their abundance, that they've both been blessed. Certainly we know very well from the, you know, prior to this, how God has blessed Jacob along the way and made him prosper. And he's done quite well for himself. And so they both look at their situation and recognize that they had enough. And so at Jacob's urging, Esau accepts it. Not that he needed it, but he accepts it. And I think, thinking about this for a moment, you know, thinking about what is enough, I think about the reason that I don't go to buffets anymore. And you go to the buffet. As a kid, I did, and you'd fill up a plate, and you'd sit down, and you'd eat all of it, and then, hey, there's more food up there. I haven't even made to one section, right? And you fill yourself, and then you say, well, I've had enough. You can feel that you've had actually probably more than enough, and then you still want more, and I do not enjoy those experiences. I don't want to put myself in that position anymore. And yet I think that is the way that we operate sometimes just in life in general. And that is, hey, but there's room for more. There's always more that you can have. And that goes with eating certainly, but it goes into any number of areas within the materialistic world that we live in. We can always have more. We can always have a better car, a bigger house, you know, whatever it might be, there's always more. And yet I think it's, you know, that idea of contentment is knowing, that you've got enough, that you don't need it anymore. And certainly there's room for understanding that there are times where you may not have enough, but I think when we're in the position of knowing that we have enough, it's good to recognize that. And say, I don't need this excess. I think about other examples. I think about just very briefly Joseph. You see Joseph's life, full of ups and downs. A lot of downs for a while, being sold into slavery. You know, being accused, going to prison. All of those things, terrible things. Before ultimately he was escalated to being second in command of all of Egypt. And of course that happened all at the hand of God. And while we don't necessarily read of any of his complaints, so I can only assume that he acknowledges the fact that he was blessed by God, especially when you look at the end of Genesis, when he understands and he's relaying to his brothers, you meant things for evil for me, but God meant them for good. He understood that, yeah, he was in a couple of tough spots, a couple of really difficult places, and yet it was by God's hand that he was able to get through them. And probably a better example, because we have so much more material to look at, and I certainly can't cover everything that's being said, but another person that had a lot of ups and downs, and that's Paul. And so I want to look over at 2 Corinthians 12, verse 6. Though if I should wish to boast, I will not be a fool, for I would be speaking the truth, but I refrain from it, so that no one may think more than he sees in me or hears from me, so to keep me from being conceited because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to harass me, to keep me from being conceited. Three times I pleaded with the Lord about this, that it should leave me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. For the sake of Christ, then, I am content with weakness, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities. For when I am weak, then I am strong. There's a number of passages that we could read at this point in looking at Paul's life, but I think this is a pretty good summary of what Paul's life looked like. That he had things out there that happened to him, miserable experiences, being stoned, being shipwrecked. Right? We can go through the number of things that happened to Paul, and being thrown in prison, of course. And yet he recognized that even through all of that, he could be content. He could be content with even the discomfort that he was in. And here, we have him talking about that thorn in the flesh. Don't really know exactly what that was. But he prayed for it, and the prayer it was denied, and there was a purpose in it. That things could have been easier on him, but that thorn in the flesh was there, and there for a reason. And yet, even in that, even knowing that he knew that God could answer that prayer, God could have taken that away. It's not a matter of God not having the power to do it, but God didn't do it and didn't do it on purpose. And yet, him knowing that, he still could recognize that he was content in the circumstances that he was in. Even when even if he were out of prison, he still might be in some sort of continual pain throughout his life. And yet he could still choose contentment. And I think, that's the goal to shoot for sometimes it's easy to say, yeah, I'm content. My life, I feel like, is pretty easy. Of course I'm content. I think the question will be, well, what happens when something really bad happens? Can I be content then? Can I be content when something that I value gets taken away from me? Can I be content then? When I was in high school as a senior, my dad had a aneurysm and stripped him of a lot of things. He was a hard worker, and still is. But when that aneurysm happened, it prohibited him from working. And it was hard to see because, I don't know. I'm getting choked up on this. I didn't even have it on my paper. But it stripped him of his manhood. That he saw himself as a provider, and for that to be taken away from him was really hard. It's still hard. My mom over Christmas was just telling me that he's 70 years old. It still eats him up. Now, he did things. He worked hard. He ended up, ending up getting his insurance license and things like that. But later on, it took him years and years to get to that point, and it was awesome. I'm so happy that he was able to do that, but it still hangs over his head that was taken away from him. And the point is that sometimes when you have something and then it's taken away, it's hard to be content because you remember when you had that thing, right? I don't miss not having a Lamborghini. I've never had a Lamborghini. It doesn't really, right? But if something were taken away from me that I have, that I cherish, if something happened to my wife or my children, that would be hard for me to get through. And the question is can we be content when something terrible happens? Paul saw things terrible happen, and he could still say he was content. Let me look back at a couple of examples of discontentment. You've got the hook, right? You're gonna pull me off, right? I am gonna get through this, I promise. I think back at some instances of discontentment, and Adam and Eve is not the first example that you might think of. But when you look at it, there is an aspect of being discontent. Genesis 3, that temptation was made, that God had said, "Don't eat from that tree," and yet Satan comes along and he says, "Hey, this fruit's pretty good." In verse 2, "And the woman said to the serpent, 'We may eat of the fruit of the tree of the garden, but God said, You shall not eat of the fruit of the tree that is in the midst of the garden, neither shall you touch it, lest you die.' But the serpent said to the woman, 'You will not surely die, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil.'" So that, hey, I didn't recognize that this could change my life, that this could make me more than what I am right now, is the snare that Satan left for Adam and Eve. I put Adam in there. He was part of it. He knew better. But here Satan is speaking directly to Eve. And you eat of this, you can be more, right? That idea of not being content with your status. She didn't even know about it. Now my life can be different. Oh, I can be like God? Well, that sounds pretty good. Now she's not content to just not eat of the fruit, and she eats of the fruit. Here, Adam, this is good. And I think one of the concepts here is there's a consequence, right, to the thing, to getting the things that we think we want. You want a new car, okay? Have fun with that $800 payment every month or whatever, whatever it is. It's like, well, having a new car sounds nice, but having an $800 payment does not sound so nice. And so it's like, but there's a penalty for getting the things that you want sometimes. And I think, clearly here is an example of that. A second example, the children of Israel in the wilderness, right? Here they are. And verse 24 of Exodus 15. "And the people grumbled against Moses, saying, 'What shall we drink?' And he cried to the Lord, and the Lord showed him a log, and he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet." And so having water, is that a necessity? It's kind of a necessity. To be without water is a problem. Yeah, sure. But the problem wasn't that they needed water. The problem was the grumbling, that God had taken them this far, And yet here they are grumbling, thinking that God doesn't understand what they need. God created the human body. God knows what the human body needs. It needs water, and he took care of it. In chapter 16, starting down in verse 2, and the whole congregation of the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness, and the people of Israel said to him, "Would that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt." We would have been better off just dead. Grumbling again, going down further in verse 7, there they are grumbling against the Lord. In verse 8, and Moses said, "When the Lord gives you in the evening meat to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, because the Lord has heard your grumbling, and you grumble against him, what are we? Your grumbling is not against us, but against the Lord." And we have this over and over again. 17 verse 3, we have again more grumbling. The people were thirsty for water, and they grumbled against Moses, and said, "Did you bring us out of Egypt to kill us?" It's like they want to escalate the situation. Is that really what they were thinking, that Moses brought them there to kill them? That Moses is some sort of, maniacal, person that would just take a huge group of people out to kill them? And again, did they need water? Yeah, they needed water. Did they need something to eat? Yeah, they needed something to eat. But that still didn't give them a reason for being discontent. And maybe we need to go back and think about, well, what does it mean to be discontent? And it's according to Merriam-Webster, it's a feeling or showing satisfaction with one's possessions, with one's status, with one's situation. And they were not satisfied, to say the least. That discontentment is the issue there. Not that they had a need. And do you think that if they hadn't grumbled, that God wouldn't have done anything? I think he brought them out there for a reason, not to let them die. Do you think that the grumbling changed the outcome of their lives? It didn't. He brought them out to save them, and he would have provided. Maybe he would have provided in the exact same way that he did, but instead, the context of it is they grumbled and God gave. We have Adam and Eve not satisfied with their status. We have we have the children of Israel that aren't satisfied with what God has provided, with the way that he's provided it. And then we get to Naaman in 2 Kings chapter 5. And you'll remember Naaman had a problem. He had leprosy, something that was incurable. But fortunately for Naaman, Naaman's wife had a servant girl from the land of Israel, and that servant girl put him on track to go seek out Elisha. Naaman comes to Elisha and says, "Hey, I've got this leprosy." I'm just paraphrasing some of this. But Elisha tells him to go bathe in the river Jordan 7 times. And Naaman wasn't satisfied with that. Verse 12 of chapter 5 of 2 Kings, "Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than all of the waters of Israel? Could I not wash in them and be clean?" So he turned and went away in rage. Not satisfied with what had been asked, what he had been asked to do. But his servants came near and said to him, "My father, it is a great word the prophet has spoken to you. Will you not do it? He has actually said to you, wash and be clean. So he went down and dipped himself seven times in the Jordan, according to the word of the man of God, and his flesh was restored like the flesh of a little child, and he was clean. He wasn't happy with the God's plan. Fortunately, he changed his mind. For his betterment, he changed his mind. He could have continued to live with leprosy if he wanted. If that's the place, then I guess it's worth a try. Because if you have no other hope of being cured of leprosy, I guess you'd try anything, right? But I think it's that initial response. He left in a rage. Why? Because it wasn't exactly what he thought it would be. And we can find any number of reasons to be disappointed. But just thinking about these three, not happy with our status in life. You know, I think this goes, you know, like when you're younger, especially, you're thinking, well, why are people overlooking me? You know, don't they know that, you know, I'm here, you know, and present, and doesn't it matter what I think? Maybe it could be any number of things, but not satisfied with your status, not satisfied with what God's provided you. Certainly, I think that's one thing that we think of when we think about contentment, and then not content with God's plan. I think those are three common areas for us to find discontentment. Again, the list is endless of what it could be. There's no limit to the disappointment and the complaining that we can have. So I wanted to just briefly talk about some barriers to contentment, and I've got a number of verses here. I'm not going to read them all, but 1 Corinthians 7, verse 17, only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. Talking about, you know, essentially being satisfied with where you are right now in life. Not that things can't change, not that things won't change, but being content with the present. Because just to go around and being discontent is a distraction for our salvation, I think, at the very least. And going down, talking about a number of things that somebody might change, talking about circumcision, right? It doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. That was a thing back then. But the point is it doesn't really matter. And then we get down to verse 20. Each one should remain in the condition which he was called. Were you a bondservant when you were called? Don't be concerned about it, right? Hey, don't – if you're a bondservant – yeah, things are not great, but don't let that disrupt your salvation. And then he says, but if you can gain your freedom, avail yourself of the opportunity. Hey, if something good comes along and you can get out of this situation, do it. Do it, right? It's not, hey, you're a bondservant. Hey, you just accept it for the rest of your life. Just keep going with it, and even if you get the opportunity to get out, don't get out of it, because that's where God put you. That's not the point at all. The point is don't get so focused that it derails your salvation. But if something better comes along, go for it. I think that mindset of let's accept the situation that we're in. Let's be content with where things are, but if there's a better option, if there's a better opportunity, then yeah, let's go for it. But don't let it control our mind, or control our thinking, right? Dwelling on it to a point where it's unhealthy for us spiritually. That's a problem. Galatians 5, verse 26, let us not become conceited, provoking one another, envying one another. In Proverbs 14, verse 30, a tranquil heart gives life to the flesh, but envy makes the bones rot. There are so many things that we could talk about, and certainly, you know, certainly God understands how man's mind works, and you know, we get caught up in the materialistic world. And Ecclesiastes 5:10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves abundance with its income. This too is vanity, right? Guess what? If I want to acquire wealth, I can get more. Okay, I've got a long way before I'm rich. But like, do I really? If I'm dead set on getting rich, how long is it going to take me to get caught up with Elon and Jeff Bezos? Right? Like, I got a lot of ground to cover. Right? It's an endless pursuit, and they're not satisfied with their wealth. They want more. Who doesn't want a $450 million yacht? I mean, that sounds pretty awesome, right? But there's this warning over and over again about greed, about the love of money, and we need to be aware of that, especially in America. I think we get focused on that aspect, and it's like, well, that's a pursuit that will never be satisfied. So I want to jump in last section talking about the secret to contentment, and I think it's not really that much of a surprise to anybody that's here. And I had turn with me to Philippians 4, verse 10. I rejoice in the Lord greatly, and now at the length you have revived your concern for me. You were indeed concerned for me, but you had no opportunity. Not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. Here, Paul's talking again. We've already talked about Paul just a few minutes ago, but here he is recounting this idea that he can be content. He can be content not because the Philippians had helped him, although he appreciated their help. He could be content in any situation because of his faith, because of the fact that he knows that through God will take care. He will get through whatever situation he's in. He's been in plenty of bad situations, and he knows I can get through it. With God giving me the strength, I can get through it. It may not be pleasant. It may be miserable, but he can get through it. And I think there are a couple of things that are to be pointed out here. Number one is it's a secret that is learned. It's a secret, as he says in verse 12, I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger. He's learned the secret. It's something that can be taught. That's the good news. It's not some magic fairy dust that gets sprinkled. It doesn't work like that. You're not just going to wake up one day and say, hey, I heard a lesson. I heard a sermon on contentment. Now I'm content. Pretty good. Pretty good if I was that good. But I'm not. I'm not, because I'm going to wake up tomorrow, and I've just said this, and I'm going to still find reasons that I'm going to be tempted to complain. Well, I complain. I hope not. But let's go back just in verse 8. And this is the secret. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. What's that mean that they're not thinking about? They're not thinking about, I'm probably going to go to prison for being a Christian. That's probably not what they're thinking about. The good things that are out there, things that are true, that God has given his son to this world so that we can go to heaven. That is what they were to focus on. That's where their thoughts were to lie. It's happened to me. Certainly you get caught up thinking, oh, if I had this thing, it would make things so much better, right? I'll think about it like maybe a tool or something. Oh, if I had this tool, I'll be able to do so many things with that tool, and that'll be awesome. And yet that's a short-lived contentment. But the problem is before I get it, I'm thinking about it, and I'm thinking about it again. And it becomes a distraction for me, right? And rather than focusing on the, hey, this would be nice, there are things that would be nice, that's fine. The problem is where does my mind dwell? Where is my treasure, as Jesus says? That's where my heart's going to be. And so, it's this unhealthy dwelling on, right? That's time that I'm spending thinking about something that is eternally meaningless, but I'm using my mind to think about that rather than thinking about things that are true, things that are honorable, things that are just, things that are pure, things that are lovely. That's the trick, right? We train our minds to think about the good things that God's given us, and we can find contentment. Real quick, Psalms 37, verse 4: delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you the desires of your heart. But that only happens if your heart is aligned in the right direction, right? Not that that delight yourself in the Lord, and He will give you all of the tools that you ever wished for. That's not what he's saying there. But you align your heart to God's word, to God's truth, and everything you need will be provided. There's no doubt about it. But those things that you need, that's spiritual in nature, not physical. So I want to cut myself off there. I hope this has been helpful to you. I hope this has been, worthwhile and considering. I want to leave at that last thought that God is able to provide. He is completely capable of providing sufficiently everything that we need. Verse 19 of Philippians 4, and my God will supply every need of yours according to the riches and glory in Jesus Christ. We read back in 2 Corinthians 9 that God's gift, it's all sufficient. That God is God's gift, that we can be children of God, is an all-sufficient gift that completely capable of providing for the things that we truly need in this world. Today, we just want to really pose two questions. Don't have to answer them right now. And that is, what are you discontent with? What are you content with? And I think there's room for both. But if we think about it, if we say, well, we're discontent with our car, our car breaks down and cars are going to break down. And that's certainly an unpleasurable event when that occurs. But if we're always thinking about where we're discontent is things that are physical in nature, that's life, right? That's a reminder of, this world is temporary. Everything you own is temporary. The car that you have will break. The house that you have will need painted, right? The roof will leak. Things will happen. The job that you have could be taken away. Your job is not meant to give you a satisfaction throughout your entire life. The job that you have is where you're at right now, and that probably won't be the last place that you work. But instead, if we can find contentment in Christ, if we can find contentment in knowing God's word, if we can find contentment with my relationship with God, if can I find contentment with my service to God? And maybe I look at it and I say, you know what? That's actually an area where I should be discontent. I should look at myself and say, I am not pleased. With where my relationship is with God. I'm not satisfied with my comprehension of the Bible, with my prayer life, with whatever, right? There's room for being discontent when it's pointed in the right direction. And so today, if you recognize that, if you look at yourself and you say, yeah, I understand my life is not what it needs to be spiritually, and being discontent with your life spiritually is certainly okay, but it can be changed in a moment. And so if you're here and you're not a Christian, but you recognize that you need that all-sufficient, the all-sufficient riches that come through Christ, then now's the perfect time to be baptized. If you're here today and you know that your life hasn't been what it needs to be and you need the prayers of the church, now's the perfect time to do it.